hold on to your butts. It's time for a new episode of Destroy All Culture, a sonic death ray from Dimension X that sounds exactly like a weekly podcast hosted by Adam P. Nave and Aiden Morgan. Exposure to Destroy All Culture is 100% fatal, so we put it on the internet. Now listen and die. Lethal effects may take up to 75 years. And here we are with sort of episode 146 of Destroy All Culture. I'm Adam P. Nave, and with me as always is Aiden Morgan.
I don't know numbers.
Yeah, it's sort of 146 because we recorded 144 and something went weird with the audio and we're trying to fix it. But if we don't, this will still be called 146, but on a spiritual level, it would then shift down to 145. So that'll just be confusing and there might just never be a 144 and fuck that number.
Maybe I'll put up a post for episode 144 and just say post not advertised as described.
Right, just yeah. Something. Yeah.
Yeah.
So anyway, we should start, of course, by talking about them spiders, man.
Yes, spiders. This time, spiders, man, is far from home.
Yes, and actually, before we start, there's a character I'm willing to bet you don't know about. It's a little C-side character. He hasn't appeared much. But he is actually called Spider's Man.
Oh, I have heard of Spider's Man, but I think I've only heard of him from you, so.
Gotcha. There you go. Yeah, he's in one of the crossovers, the sequel to. Good Lord, I'm forgetting it right now. Frank is yelling at the screen. The sequel to Spider-Verse, Spider-Geddon. That was it.
Okay.
And he's one of the alternate universe Peter Parkers, and basically it's a collective of spiders that Peter fell into, that they ate him, and then they collectively have decided that they are Peter Parker.
Ah, yes.
So it's just like a bunch of hyper-intelligent spider collective in a Spider-Man suit.
That's gotta be tough for like daily, regular Peter Parker life.
There isn't one. But yeah, no, Spider-Man is delightful. But anyway, so yeah, we finally gotten our second Spider-Man movie from, you know, Marvel/Sony.
Yes. Yeah, I don't know about you, but I have different, equally strong opinions on Spider-Man Far From Home. I have one opinion that says this is a great worthy Spider-Man installment. It was a hoot to watch, with a lot of fun little nods to Marvel Cinematic Universe, to the comics, etc., etc. And the other part was like, this is kind of an inessential Marvel movie with the only good stuff buried in the post credits, which makes me wonder why we watched like 2 hours of Spider-Man I mean, I know there are arguments against this opinion. I'm well aware.
Well, yeah. I mean, first of all, like just calling any like inessential to the larger scheme of things gets into dangerous territory. Because remember the Iron Man 2 problem where it was so tied into everything that it kind of fucked up the movie.
Right. Exactly.
But also, I think this is essential. As the end of this phase, the whole Infinity Gauntlet phase, just because it shows you post-snap, like it shows you people dealing with it and like how people came back and a little bit more just, you know, what happened in a game where it's like, they're back. Okay, cool. Like it actually deals with it some, which is like the weirdness and how the world works now.
Counterpoint, they don't really deal with it. Think about that.
No, they deal with it as much as they're going to. Which is like enough to go like, they came back and it was weird. And there's like, you know, like here's this kid who they all knew who's now 5 years older, but some of them aren't. Like, they dealt with it just enough to go, yeah, we know, but this is how we're just going to keep moving.
Right. Yeah, there's only so...
You didn't need 2 hours for that, obviously.
Right. I mean, there's only so much time that the Marvel Cinematic Universe is going to spend on stuff like that before they say, okay, it's time to tell a story about a Spider-Man and a little bit more about the larger world.
Right.
Yeah. So, yeah, so they start, the Noah Centineo's character. And then, of course, they have like a little montage saying, frankly, a very, very nicely done little... like high school news video montage.
Yes.
About, you know, the fallen heroes. And I know the heroes are supposed to sort of stand in for what happened to the world, but we don't. One thing is, we don't really know. I feel like we could have known more about the world.
Yeah.
Post snap. but we don't really get we sort of it's about it's largely about the heroes and then I don't know.
I mean, you get a little bit about the kids. You get a little bit from like May with the like I came back and someone else lived in my apartment and you know there's like a whole group and they're dealing with a huge homeless problem now.
Right.
So you get bits and pieces, but again, it can't be the focus, and I get that.
Yeah.
I also think it did deal with the post-Tony Stark MCU, like, that there is a void there, and we know there are other voids, but, like, we know that, like, Sam's going to take over Captain America, and we'll deal with that void separately.
Right.
But that post-Tony void was interesting. And again, I think, like, it was first and foremost a good Spider-Man movie, and that's what it needed to be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it did good Spider-Man stuff, I really enjoyed the fact that they brought in Mysterio, and I enjoyed the fact that he was absolutely bullshitting about the multiverse.
He's Mysterio. That's what he does, right? Like, and I actually really do like that. You know, there's a complaint to be made in the early Marvel movies, especially that like all the bad guys are just like evil reflections of the good guy and people that they know.
Right.
But I do think it's interesting that in the Spider-Man movies so far, all the major bad guys are created by Stark and that Peter has to deal with them.
I know. Yeah, no matter what
like happened. They've shifted it so that like Uncle Ben obviously existed. Like that was that little shot of the suitcase he uses.
Mm-hmm.
With like, you know, Ben Parker's initials. But that in a weird way, like, Tony Stark has become the MCU Spider-Man's Uncle Ben.
Yeah, actually, that's...
And I don't mind the shift for the movies. Like, yeah, I think it's an interesting shift.
Yep, they've got to keep things in-house, like, within the characters they've established. I totally get that. And I believe that the BP doesn't stand for Ben Parker. It stands for British Petroleum.
Okay.
So...
I can see it.
You heard it here first.
Yeah, Spider-Man owned by Big Oil.
Yep, and last, as a matter of fact. You'll never hear that again from anywhere else.
You never know.
I'm going to get on Reddit. Start a thread, yes.
Anyway. But, I thought, you know, again, like, and I do think that if you add in all the, like, the Civil War stuff through this, you get a really interesting arc for Peter.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because, like, Civil War, he's showing off. Like, he's trying to prove himself. And then you get to the first one, the first like solo movie, and he's actually not that great yet.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when he's not like actively trying to prove himself to people that he looks up to, he's like he's a bit of a fuck up. Like he hasn't gotten there yet. He's Spider-Man, but he's finding his feet.
Yeah, it presented a little bit of a challenge actually in the first half of this movie, because he had to kind of be a little bit useless.
Yeah,
like seriously, when Mysterio was doing his thing with fighting the first two monsters, Peter Parker does very little by comparison. Well,
but it makes sense because everything we've seen up to then is that when he's been solo, it's been a screw up and he's gotten yelled at.
Right,
and that everything else he's done has been in service to doing what like Stark says, doing what the Avengers say.
Mm-hmm.
And so the first part of that movie is him still in that role of like I'm not the guy.
Yes.
Like, I'm the guy who helps the guy. And then by the end of the movie, he's fucking Spider-Man now.
He's the
like,
guy. Yeah.
Yeah. And so it's a really interesting arc across the five things he's been in.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, like all the Marvel movies, and this is where the essentialism of how does it fit in comes back. You know, like, if you look at any of the characters in just their solo movies, you don't get a complete arc.
True.
You have to add in the Avengers movies and Civil War, frankly. To get complete arcs for everyone, which is, I think it's fine, obviously, but it's a little damaging if people are just like, I just want to watch Spider-Man.
Yeah, I mean, they're a little bit, yeah, I mean, this has always been the thing with the MCU. The character arcs are all usually, not so much at the beginning, for example, when you had, like, sort of Captain America, you know.
Right.
First Avenger, but as everything progressed, things became, and became serialized. Character arcs became stretched out over various movies, and some people have had trouble with this, but I just think this is the storytelling form that the MCU has chosen,
right?
And you're on board or you're not,
right? And to be fair, like, it's a thing that no one else in cinema has ever done.
That's true.
And that, like, in the last 10 years, a number of people have tried to build and no one has successfully built it.
Mm-hmm.
Except for Marvel. And you can list any number of reasons why. I think everyone kind of agrees at this point it comes down to Feige, right? Like,
right.
You need that one person who oversees everything, who just gets it. And you're not going to... It's like going like, well, why were all the DC animated shows in like this period of time so really good? It's like, well, because you had Tim and Dini overseeing everything.
Yeah.
You had that one singular voice that happened to click, and you kept it.
You had a vision. Yes, exactly. I would actually sort of look at like older serialized stories. Let's say old pulp Flash Gordon and Lone Ranger stories.
Right.
You've got a bunch of serialized episodes, but they never thought to bring in modern character arc storytelling in the same way. And this is what Marvel has ended up doing.
Right.
Which is they've blended serialized pulp with peak TV, and this is what we've gotten.
Yeah, I mean, I think because it is so new still. I mean, it's been 10 years, but it's still new in that sense. Mm-hmm. That it is doing TV level, and even then TV level like. You can't quite go back to almost anything else because it is across different character lines. It's across, like, that's the thing. It's like, I'm trying to even think of something that really fits. And you can't.
No.
Because I don't even think there's been a TV show that's really been like, here's these five TV shows that all plug into each other.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's all new.
Yeah. And it's fascinating. Like, from a technical standpoint, that's fascinating. And again, luckily for me, at least, like, I'm on board with it. Like, I enjoy it.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Well, I mean, I suppose...
And I can imagine if you don't, you know, you'll have gaps, and some of those gaps are fine. Like, you know, I think they are getting better, especially with, like, the later, like, Endgame and Infinity War and all that. Well, you didn't really watch the Guardians movies, let's say.
Right.
You know, and here's, like, just enough information to get by.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, the first Avengers movie was perfect for that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that was probably the first and best example of this kind of storytelling. Well, at least certainly the first. Yeah.
But, yeah, I don't know. I personally enjoy it. And I also find that I really do enjoy the differences in how they work from, like, the comics to the movies, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I never had a problem with it, but the Spider-Man thing, I think, it highlights it the most for me. Because I think he might be just the most radically different in little ways, but still the same character, if that makes sense.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Yeah,
like, he's recognizably Spider-Man to me. Like, not even visually, although, yes.
But he's been plugged into this. He's been plugged into the very specific world that the MCU has created.
Right.
Yeah, which is like largely Iron Man dependent. When it comes to
That's fine. Like the MCU has been since that first Avengers movie. They've always set it up for the Iron Man and Captain America dependency.
Yeah, and I think one of the challenges they have to do with this version of Spider-Man is that the thing that animates Spider-Man as a character, at least for me, is his underdog status.
Right, that old Parker look.
Right, and then so they have to sort of keep him as an underdog while essentially giving him sort of access to like satellites full of drones that he can summon at a moment's notice.
Well, so, but that's the Parker look, right? Like he keeps getting these legs up and then they turn out to be terrible.
Right. Exactly. So yeah, that's the solution they've gone for. But you could see them trying to work it in the film, and it was fascinating to see how they worked it. Because they're like, man, we're giving this guy massive advantages that traditionally he didn't enjoy in the comics. And then, I mean, not always.
And like Dan Slott has died. It's happened. Like there was an arc, I actually didn't read it because I was just dipping in and out. But there was an arc called like Big Time where like, you know, Peter starts this company and it's this huge, it turns into this huge thing.
Right.
And so, yeah, it's something that you always do want to play with Peter in general. It's, again, that's how you do that luck thing. It's something great happens to him.
Mm-hmm.
And then that great thing specifically is the cause of all of the problem.
Exactly. Yes.
You know, it's the I have to get, and like in the 60s, it was the, you know, simpler version of it, which is like I have to get Aunt May's pills from the drugstore, and the drugstore closes at 5, but I also have to stop these bank robbers. you know, well, I'll just go get the pills, and then the bank robbers turn out to have, like, done something bigger. It just, you know, you play with it back and forth.
Exactly. Yeah. There's no decision without consequences in the Spider-Man universe. And so
that's part of the fun. Also, I love Night Monkey.
Noct Monkey. Yes. Yes, I love the whole Night Monkey thing. I just love the fact that Ned comes up with that on the fly, and then it literally turns into like an entire news story, which that was delightful. I also like the sort of politics of resistance in this one.
Yeah.
Yeah, the notion that Mysterio's essential power is to come up with complete bullshit on the fly and create massive illusions to take the place of genuine heroes, and that in order to defeat him, Peter has to go literally inside the illusion.
Uh-huh.
He has to go behind stage, but behind the stage is actually like within the stage itself. So very nice, well done. I like it.
Yeah, I mean, I also do like that they finally, like, they've been hinting, starting with, really, with Infinity War, they've been hinting toward the Spider-Sense.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
That, like, it wasn't a thing he figured out quickly, which, in the comics, obviously, he figures out very, very fast.
Right.
But I do kind of like that slow burn of, like, what does this even mean? Like, what is this thing?
Yeah, it's funny, because in Sam Raimi's Spider-Man, the Spider-Sense is, like, the first thing.
Well, in the comics it is too.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so having
like, traditionally, that's always been the thing.
Yeah.
That it's like, you know, like I think it's like traditionally like a car, right? Like even in the Spider-Verse movie, Miles actually reads that comic, which is just Amazing Fantasy 15.
Right.
And it's you know, this car comes out of nowhere and he leaps up because he senses the danger, and then he's, what, I'm sticking to walls?
that's great.
But yes. I do like that kind of slow burn. To the point where, like, okay, it becomes a major thing because it has to now.
Mm-hmm.
But that they also do low-key be like, I thought that's how you dodge shit. Like, it was there and he was using it unconsciously, but this is the first time he uses it consciously.
Right.
I'm also not sure how I feel about the Peter Tingle joke was funny, but I'm like, but we never actually called it a spider sense.
Yeah.
But then again, this was, weirdly, the first time we've heard the name Captain Marvel.
Oh.
Yeah. It's not used in her movie. It's not used in Endgame.
Oh, good point.
And then it just happens, and everyone's like, yeah, okay.
Sure, Captain Marvel. Yep, we know who you're talking about.
Right.
Someone's like, you mean the guy who says Shazam, right? No, not that one. Yeah, that's a good point.
So I don't know. I dug it. I want to see it again.
Yeah, I think, well, there's a few things that, I mean, there's a couple of reasons I would like to see it again. And one of them, like, revolves around the end scene. Actually, there's a couple of things I'm curious about. One, of course, is the end scene, which we see that, Fury and, what's Kobe Smulders' character's name?
Hill.
Hill, thank you. I was like, my brain's like, Robin Sparkles? That's not right.
Right, yeah, Scherbatsky.
Yeah, exactly. We discover, of course, they are, you know, they are Kree, or Skrull.
Skrull.
Man, my brain's, well, it's...
And at least, you know, Ben Mendelsohn, the Skrull from Captain Marvel specifically.
Right, Talos, and his wife.
The directors talked about that, by the way.
Oh.
They talked about why they did it and the timing of it. As in, like, you know, like, how long has this been going on?
Yes.
And they were, like, very much, like, at the Stark funeral scene, that was really Nick Fury.
Okay, I was curious about that, because they actually reference that.
Right.
That funeral, okay.
But the part of the reason they wanted to do it was, A, in a movie with, like, Mysterio and all these fake-outs and all that, having one last twist is fun.
Mm-hmm.
To make you go back and look at it differently.
Right.
But also, it's how do you put, even after 5 years of being gone, how do you put Nick Fury, whose job it is to be suspicious, like, rock him back on his back foot? How do you do that without breaking Nick Fury?
Mm-hmm.
And it's why you make him not really Nick Fury.
Right.
And that's a good point, because, like, that, and I think that's part of what I want to go watch it, too, is that, like, okay, Nick Fury wasn't quite on his game, And it did kind of twitch me a few times during the movie.
Yeah, me too.
But then it made sense, and I'm like, okay, now I want to go watch it from that angle and see, like, where does the squirrel fall? Like, where does he have to work on it?
Yes, exactly.
Also, hopefully that space station we see Fury in at the end did look a lot like, what is it called, the Peak, which is the S.W.O.R.D. space station.
Okay.
So, I that's the other reason I'm thinking this is recent, because otherwise we would have seen it. Like, I feel like it was one of these Captain Marvel things of they were building this and dealing with this as a home, and they've kind of finally put it into action.
Yeah.
And that maybe they'll announce a S.W.O.R.D. movie.
Ooh.
Because that'd be awesome.
That would be kind of awesome. The other thing I want to... reason I want to watch it again is... because it occurred to me at some point that we've got Beck's character, who it was a researcher working with Tony Stark.
Yeah.
You know, and he was actually in close enough contact with Tony Stark that even he was behind the stage at during a scene in Civil War, and we've also got Happy Hogan in the film, but presumably Happy Hogan might know who Quentin Beck is.
Right.
So I'm like, how do they? Because I never thought about it till the end of the film, and I thought, I wonder how they keep them apart.
Well, I mean, but they do keep them apart. That's the thing. It's because Happy's on his own thing.
Yeah.
And he doesn't meet up with S.H.I.E.L.D. until after.
Right. So I just wanted to watch it again to see.
Right.
To see how they work that particular.
Yeah. Like I think Peter keeps mentioning Beck, but he doesn't say Quentin Beck. And it's not that unusual last name.
Right.
To maybe not get it up. To like, hey, but also it's Happy. Like, who know? You know, I believe that Happy just forgot this dude.
I did like that they
picked like a couple other people who had been in some of the earlier movies,
right?
With Stark,
yes.
To just kind of really bake that in.
Yeah. I mean, that's the half of the story of the Marvel Cinematic Universe is fallout from Tony Stark's bullshit.
Sure.
Yeah, and it's. It's fun. It's fun that they're still. I mean, eventually they have to find something new. But I mean, even now, right at the end of like this phase, they're just doing that a little more.
Right, and again, like with Spider-Man, given everything that they've done with it, it makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if they had pulled this with like a Guardians movie, say, it would be, what the fuck are you doing?
Yeah, don't tell me that they were just kind of pushing it, but
yeah. You
know. What else? Oh, and of course, the one other thing I quite enjoyed, and obviously these are all spoilers, but discovering that J.K. Simmons is in as J. Jonah Jameson, but not as an editor of a paper, but as Alex Jones, essentially.
Yeah. I mean, it makes sense, right? Because, like, the editor of a newspaper is not going to have that kind of thing anymore.
Yeah, not that kind of clout.
And I think, like, in the PS4 game, he was doing, like, a podcast or something.
Right, yes.
So, yeah, it makes sense to keep moving it with the time.
Yep.
And I do love that they've admitted that they wrote themselves into a corner with that. Like, the director, Waters, was saying that, like, he has to go back and read the whole Civil War thing where Peter's identity was outed.
Right.
Now that, like, he wants to go back to the text to kind of see, like, okay, well, now what? And, of course, eventually that used Doctor Strange, and I wouldn't be surprised if they did that.
Right.
Like, made everyone forget again.
Or something. This is a... Yeah,
but
I mean,
it's also the MCU Spider-Man. Like, you could just do it. I mean...
Sure.
But it does ruin the everyday status of Spider-Man. That's the problem.
Yeah.
Is I think it essentially breaks something in him.
Mm-hmm. No, it's exact. I mean, Tony Stark can afford to end his first film with I Am Iron Man. But we can never. You're never going to have, Peter Parker going, "I am Spider-Man." It has to be said for him.
Of course, you do know that in that first movie, that line was not supposed. That was not. I mean, there was so little script anyway. A lot of it was improv.
Oh yeah, no, yeah, yeah.
But Peter, that was a Downey thing where he just added that at the end, and everyone was like, "Wait, we're doing what?" but he was exactly right. That's what that Tony Stark would do.
Apparently, Jeff Bridges really hated being on the set at first.
Yes.
Iron Man.
Yes, he did.
Until he was
everyone else loved it.
Until he was like, "Oh, I get it. We're just screwing around. It's a $2 million, or it's a $20 million student film. That's cool."
Yeah.
And then he said, then I'm able to relax. But I didn't realize up until I read that interview that Jeff Bridges would be, because we all like know him as like the dude or, you know, whatever else. But to know that he's actually wants to be disciplined and prepared on set, I'm like, oh, that's, I guess to look that ramshackle and easygoing in front of the camera, you have to be really disciplined to do it. So there you go.
But moving away from Spider-Man,
so all right,
we'll just take the entire podcast talking about it. Young Justice came back.
It did.
And of course, the weirdness is they came back with 3 episodes, and then starting this next Tuesday, because now they're on Tuesdays, we only get 1 episode a week until the end of August, when we get the final 3.
Mm-hmm.
But we are back, and they did one thing that surprised me.
What's that?
Having Bart, like, setting the timeline to, like, Barda hasn't turned against the Furies yet.
Right. Yeah, I did find that interesting. I'm like, oh, okay, Barda's with the Furies at this point, so.
And it's interesting to me just because, historically, and not that they have to play by this rule, but, you know, historically it's always Scott is like, fuck all this, and eventually convinces her to go.
Yeah, in this case, it's clearly the act of Superman saving her that begins her.
And,
yeah.
And that makes me feel like I almost want her to now convince Scott somehow. Like, that's where I'd like it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I would deal well with that switch. But again, having Superman, you know, the symbol of hope, like, be the one, that's fine.
Yeah.
But
no,
I wasn't expecting it. Like, when you first see her, I was like, okay, cool, so the new gods are coming to help. Oh, wait, no, we're not there yet.
Like, I know.
So, well done, show.
Yeah, Granny Goodness pops up, and I'm like, oh, okay. She's
also,
not
we now have
person.
Yet another team, I think. Jesus, the show.
Yeah, I know. I'm, like, watching this. Like, I sort of settled in. I'm like, what now? What more nonsense? Come on.
But they balance it so well.
I know. They do great. I mean, they do, like, even their worst episodes are, like, still, like, really watchable and really, really worthwhile.
Yeah,
just consistently great. And of course, having Superman say "Stay whelmed," I thought was
that fucking killed me.
Yeah. Say what now? Sorry, it rubs off. Whatever he says. I'm like, nice. Yeah, and of course we get lots of people talking about things that are Crash or not Crash.
Right.
I'm like, oh, I miss Young Justice slang.
Yeah, it has. They use it so well.
Hmm.
But yeah, no, the show, you know, continues juggling all of these characters. Like, every fucking few episodes, they introduce, like, 6 new characters. And somehow, it never quite feels overstuffed, and it never gets really confusing in ways they don't mean to.
Right.
They'll happily confuse you. But they'll also only do it on purpose.
Exactly. And they look, they'll give you a set piece with, you know, characters that we all know, you know.
Yeah.
I think in episode, might not have been 14, but maybe 15, you get that fight with, you know, you've got like Black Manta and so on, you know, fighting in Russia against, you know, Beast Boy and
Tigress
and
yeah.
So on. So I'm like, that's, you know, this is, you know, anybody who's watched, you know, Young Justice, you know, in the first couple seasons, by and large, will recognize everybody.
Right, and we get, like, a big Halo. Justice League moment, and...
Yeah. So, yeah. I think even though they're still throwing new characters at the wall, it's still watchable. Like, they don't hold your hand, but they certainly do everything clearly enough that you can still follow along.
Right. And hey, we get the Suicide Squad.
Yes. That was, and I didn't, it took me a while to figure that out. That confused me at first. I'm like,
yeah, it wasn't until I heard Amanda Waller, you know?
Yeah, but I didn't connect it at first because I heard the other voice and I'm like, wait, that's not Black Manta talking. Who is that? Why is there like a bomb? And I should have clued in when I was like, oh, there's a bomb in Boomerang's neck. Okay. Why didn't
right.
I get that at this point? Then I saw Waller, and I'm like, oh, shit, of course. They're part of the Suicide Squad. Boy. Okay.
Right, and we've had Waller before, of course.
Right.
In you know, Bel Rev and...
Yeah, exactly.
But it's just, for some reason, everyone who does Waller, especially in the cartoons and all that. Like, they all do their best CCH Pounder now.
Yeah.
Like, it's because it's not CCH Pounder who's doing it in Young Justice.
But and whoever does it is.
I forget who it is, but she's channeling that.
Yes.
And so whenever I hear that certain cadence that always triggers me to, you know, CCH Pounder, I'm just like, okay, that's what we're doing today.
Yep. Fair enough.
I also do like their whole, like her whole thing with Aquaman, which it still feels weird to call him Aquaman.
Yeah.
But just the flat out like, oh, I'm telling you this because we can play this game.
Right.
And it's just such a interesting moment for me, if only because it shows you how far, like, you know, he specifically has come. Like, yes, we all know he's co-leading the Justice League. But that, like, Waller respects him enough to treat him as someone to be taken seriously.
Exactly. This is a long, long way from, like, first season Young Justice.
Right. Which is, I think, actually the first time we saw Waller was, like, way back in that very first prison episode.
I believe so, yeah.
Yeah, when we first see Bell-Rev, and it was just like, we haven't really seen her. She's like, and that's one of the things I love about the show is that people can go away for two seasons and come back and have made moves in between. And you start thinking, like, what have they done that, like, might have impacted something that, like, we just haven't quite triggered to?
Yeah.
Because the show is fucking neurotic that way.
I also love the fact that I have to say one of my favorite villains shaping up in this season is probably Granny Goodness, because on the one hand, she's just like a straight up apocalyptic villain, but also she's a classic asshole Hollywood producer. Like, you know, there's that whole thing when Garfield says, you know, I'm putting you on notice, and she retaliates by making him do the same take over and over again and just pissing him off. Like, right. Being at once immensely cosmically evil, but also just really petty.
And that was always Kirby's Granny. That's the thing. It's like, yeah. Granny Goodness when, like, I don't know, Granny Goodness when written well is just one of those great, like, a lot of the fourth world villains are just, there's so much meat around them, right?
Yeah.
Like, they're not really two-dimensional. Like, right. Zsasd, even, it feels like he should be two-dimensional. Because he's just a guy who likes to torture people. But there's always that, like, little twitch somewhere where it's like, yes, but he actually takes pride in his work, like, in a weird way that you, like, not that you respect it, but just it brings something else to the table. And, like, Granny's whole, no, I honestly love my children. Also, I torture them. Also, I enjoy it.
Right.
But I can hang all of those the same tree.
Mm-hmm.
And you start to understand why, like, you know, Scott and Barnardos are just fucked up.
Right. Yes. Yeah, that's great. Yeah, I mean, the new god. I mean, at heart, the New Gods is a gigantic family soap opera, in the weirdest and best ways.
Yeah, no, and Granny is just, again, if you're going to take the time and write her well, is just one of the best pieces to play with, because you really do get to play with that whole spectrum of just weird and petty and mean and sweet. And as much as I enjoy this version, I still will always miss the best voice casting ever for Granny Goodness, Ed Asner.
Oh my god.
Yeah, in all the Tim Dini stuff, Ed Asner voiced Granny.
I did not know that.
Oh yes, and it was best fucking thing.
My god.
Ed Asner makes the single best Granny Goodness, hands down. Not that the Young Justice one is bad at all, you know, no.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But just Ed fucking Asner doing Granny Goodness is a treat. Like, go back and find, like, one of the Justice League episodes with Granny and just kind of roll around and revel in Ed Asner doing this.
Jesus. Yeah, that's, okay, I'm curious now. Oh, speaking of Ed Asner, we're getting a Blu-ray of Doom Patrol.
Yes, mentioned. Thank God.
Yeah, this is good. I mean, at least
and
we're
it'll
getting...
be... It's supposed to show up on, like, Prime and iTunes, Prime iTunes, like Google, and everything else in the world, like Vudu, whatever the hell the other things are. I think, like, you can buy it on YouTube eventually. In, like, another week or two, like late July.
Okay.
I think like the 26th or so. And then mid-August, it's supposed to be, or late August, it's supposed to be for sale. Like on physical media.
Right.
And it will have extras, and it will have commentaries and a gag reel, apparently.
The show is already a gag reel, but okay.
I'm like, I want the gag reel just to be like perfectly serious takes.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was thinking.
But no, I am so looking forward to the commentaries. Like, my great hope that I know that they won't do, but my great hope is that we get a Grant Morrison commentary in there somewhere.
Oh my God, yes. Yeah. Like I say, I don't know if that'll happen, but that would be fun if it did.
Yeah, and like, who knows what the fuck what the extras are like? I think there's supposed to be some deleted scenes, possibly too. And I'm like, what was too weird that you guys cut it out?
Oh, I like that.
So yeah, that is going to be a lot of fun. Yay! Still no word on the second season, of course, but the whole DC Universe thing being up in the air is kind of at this point obviously why.
Right. So, well, we'll get news down the pike some point.
My guess is we're going to get it in about 2 weeks in San Diego.
Oh, yeah.
That we'll have something. Either they're going to finally announce another slate. Because right now, like the last thing that's supposed to premiere, I think it's Stargirl, is supposed to end around the time the Warner thing comes live. Early next year. And so I think we're either going to get a this is our next slate or a this is how we're folding in. Whatever it is, I think it's going to be San Diego. Because, I mean, where else do you do it, right?
Exactly, yeah. Oh, fair enough. I can live with that.
So, hooray!
Hooray. So anyway, I was gonna say earlier, we were talking about Spider-Man and the MCU. But then there's also, of course, latest Agents of Shield,
Yes.
in which I think they're finally sort of bringing together all the various bits and pieces of the season.
Right? Along with the who is the actual villain?
Right, although it's not exactly up in the air, but even the allies seem to be
Well,
not
I think it
exactly
is
good
kind of up
guy.
in the air because it could be what's your name, it could be Sarge. Like, I don't know which end of this to trust yet. And I think it's going to come back to like they both need to just be fucking like stopped.
Yeah, I think you're right on this count.
And I'm also pretty sure at this point that the whole fake Coulson Sarge thing has something to do with the what you would call it, the
The monoliths?
big stone, the monolith, thank you. And hopefully this is the last season we deal with them. Like, it'll either be that, or like we'll reveal that they're doing it next season, Will, and that'll end the show. Because they have been part of the show since season one. And they have been kind of secretly behind everything. Just about. And it's like it's time to stop.
Well, we seem to be getting like their origin at long last.
And again, like maybe if we go the whole doppelganger, like anyone who walked through these things, they created these weird doppelgangers. Maybe next season is all evil Shield. I don't know.
Ooh, that'd be fun. I'm just amazed now that I think about it how much of this show is sort of like mineral based. It's weird.
Yeah. Get animal, vegetable, mineral man here. Stat. Yeah, someone.
Sorry.
I think it might have been AV Club. I just like poked my head at it for a minute. Mentioned the, like go back and look at the pilot of the show, and then look at this episode and be like, yeah, this episode's just calmly like opens with a spaceship. Like, just it has come so far.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think, I think more than any other show I've ever seen, I mean, the difference between the beginning and the like latter, the later seasons, just it's just immense, just in terms of the content, in terms of the characters, the confidence. I mean, everything about it is just completely different. They're barely even recognizable as the same shows in many ways. Just a few
Yeah,
of the
I
same
mean,
characters, really.
right. Like, I'm trying to think, and I'm like, person of interest. I'm like, no, the scope of person just changed early. But, like, the first last episode, like, no, you can see it.
Yeah, no, the DNA of the very end of Person of Interest was there from the beginning, even if it was handled much more as a standard procedural.
Right. Yeah, I'm trying to. I think I have to agree with you on this. Like that, this, and of course we've both been watching it the whole time. But if we were doing the long loved first last,
yes,
a first last with this show when it ends would be the most amazing. What the fuck?
I would say so. Actually, maybe I'll do that. Maybe I'll do a quick sort of like when S.H.I.E.L.D. finally comes to an end, I will look at the pilot episode and then the last one and say,
yeah, you know, like the first episode, they spent all their budget on like bad green screen of a flying car.
Oh yes.
And like this episode already, it's like we start with like exterior spaceship, you know.
Exterior spaceship, nice. Of course, the thing I found, one of the things that I really enjoyed about doing that whole first last thing was that, television shows were never really considered to be complete stories in many ways. So ending episodes often were just kind of like they kind of fizzled out. Like the last Charlie's Angels, for example, was very different from the first one, but they never wanted to bring it around. In TV shows these days, they often try to call back to the beginning. So you often it'll give you these call-outs and like give it a coherence that maybe otherwise it doesn't quite deserve. So yeah, so they might do that, the bastards.
I still remember, and again, yeah, people who haven't been listening to us for however many fucking years we've been doing this, I am sorry, but I still just remember the fucking sliders thing.
Holy shit. I was not prepared for how crazy bad Sliders got at the end of its run. It had moved to some obscure network. I don't even remember which. Maybe it might have been USA Network. Because it was no longer on one of the big three. And the budget was so pared down. And only one character remained out of out of everything from the beginning. It was a completely different show except for one guy in this like bargain basement.
And actually, there you go. There's a show that's changed radically in a couple seasons. Legends.
Yes. Yeah.
And it just tricked me just for the, like, there's only a few people left from the original episode.
Yeah, you're right. That would be worth looking at.
No. Although I do remember liking the first episode just for the bar fight.
Oh, I remember a bar fight from the second episode, which was like set in the 70s. I don't remember the one from the first
episode. Maybe it was the second episode then, not the first. I don't remember.
It was sort of like this. They're all sort of dressed in these nominally 70s outfits and just kind of smack bashing each other around. It had its moments.
Yeah, it had the first spark of personality between the characters.
That was what sort of told me that this might be worth watching in the long haul. And lo and behold.
Yeah. God. Oh, Legends.
quick weird segue from Legends.
Yeah,
it's just please. A quick diversion. So there was that recent episode in which Ava and
of S.H.I.E.L.D. Yes,
yeah,
no, of Legends. What
of
are we
Legends,
talking about?
Yeah, no, okay. Of Legends, right? Ava and Sarah are caught in that sort of gigantic shopping mall that they have to work their way out of.
Yes, the lesbians in IKEA.
Yeah, the lesbians in IKEA. Exactly. Anyway, so on my YouTube page, it feeds algorithmically generated suggestions for what they think I might like.
Oh no!
And up popped this video that I know features them because I saw their picture on the thumbnail. Lesbians being useless, part two.
Wow!
And I thought, I wonder why it doesn't think I should see part one. Did YouTube think? I know what Aiden wants to see, but, you know, they would be probably wants to see this one as opposed to the other one because it can judge my sense of, like, whether lesbians are useful or not. It was very strange.
Yeah, that sort of thing is always I wouldn't say a good time, but an interesting one.
I was actually curious enough. I wanted to make sure that it was serving me like pro lesbian content and not like weird sort of like reactionary bullshit. So
Right.
I looked at the channel and it was like it's clearly like just run by some woman who just who just likes mashing together and classifying like modern bi and lesbian like clips from TV. So I'm like, okay, that's fine. But it was like I was like, huh, lesbians being useless. Not part one, just part two. Sure.
I mean, I'm
Yeah, yeah.
assuming somewhere in like the tags or something like that is like a character name that, you know.
It, precisely, yeah. Like something unlike other stuff. Like I'll watch like a recap of Legends of Tomorrow, or and then it'll find this and it'll serve this to me. So I got me a chuckle out of it.
Oh, definitely.
Oh, definitely. Thanks, YouTube.
God. Oh, man.
Anyway, oh, I also
Actually,
saw.
just
Sorry.
completely off topic.
Yes.
Sorry, just because I've been rewatching West Wing.
Oh, cool.
Because I started listening to the West Wing Weekly, which is actually a really legitimately really great podcast. If you
Okay,
like West Wing.
sure.
It's Josh Malina, who was in West Wing, and some friend of his, and they go through every episode. But because they have Malina, they can pull in like other people who were in the show or wrote for the show or did music for it or whatever. But they also get like actual political people to talk about some of the issues. So, it's a fascinating podcast, but it started me rewatching the show. And I've hit that point that one of my favorite things in TV shows happened.
Do tell.
When in like a later season they get a bit more money and you start seeing new sets that everyone acts like they always used.
I love that, yes.
I don't know why, but it's just undefinably one of my favorite stupid things in TV, where they're like suddenly out of nowhere, everyone's hanging out in the cafeteria.
Right, and they're pretending that like they've always hung out in the cafeteria, and we're like, no, they
Right, and like you
haven't.
see it like once, but then in the next like three episodes, you're gonna see it a lot because they're going to justify building that set.
Yes.
I love it. It is just because I do like the minute I see a new set. That you can feel like, okay, they actually spent some money on this, not just like, oh, it's a room with like a drape.
Right.
There is that feeling of like, how are they gonna use it? How are they gonna make this like happen all the time?
Exactly. Or I love or the other version of that that I really enjoy is when a show, especially there'll be like a pilot or like a sort of a weird one-off episode in which they'll introduce a new location or they'll
Right.
do something and they'll be shooting on location, but after that they'll like have to build a set or they'll just ignore that they ever filmed in this one spot and pretend that someplace else is that spot. So just seeing the disconnect, like while the characters pretend that yeah, this is where we've always been. Shut up.
Yeah, I mean, you get that, of course, all the time in pilots where they haven't built the real sets, and so there's
Right.
massive change.
Yeah.
And actually, because I've been rewatching West Wing, I'm in season three already, but I just showed a friend the pilot. And when you're watching like the pilot and you watch the second episode, you don't necessarily catch it as much because you're just moving. But when you're in the middle of a show and you go back to the pilot again, and it was just making me laugh all over. I'm like, that's not the right room, like.
The my favorite weird example from not from introducing new sets, but like giving you like a what they say is the same location, but it's clearly like a set now. At the end of season four of Angel, which I know you've not seen.
Yeah, that's fine.
They basically in that season four they defeat this like sort of world-ending big bad, and like their main antagonist for the first three seasons is a law firm, named Wolfram and Hart, and so they're always sort of the it's a good thing. It's not an individual. It's like an organization that's essentially representing power in the world,
Right.
and then in somewhere in the early in season four. Wolfram and Hart just gets taken off the board. Like the big bad comes and just kills everybody. And then at the ver so they defeat the big bad, and then somebody, a character from Wolfram and Hart, pops up and says, "Wow, you've won. You've beaten you know, you've killed the big bad, and essentially you've beaten us, so we give up. We're going to give you Wolfram and Hart. And so they spend an episode in the Los Angeles's, like, you know, offices of Wolfram and Hart. And at the end, they accept. They say, yes, we'll run the place. And then in season five, it's all set in this demonic law office. And but it's completely different. And they all have to pretend that, like, what we saw throughout all of Angel, and then at the end of season four, it's like not even remotely similar. And it's I had some trouble with it, because also in season five they got the budget stripped back considerably, so it looks kind of like a set as well. So I don't know.
Yeah.
Anyway, but still, it was a clever move, but the set changes kind of gave me some pause at first.
Oh, I'm sure. I like when they, like, and I'm trying to think of an example, because I've seen it happen enough times.
Mm-hmm.
But just when you get a description of a set before you see it for like a while, and then you see it and you're like, that's not at all okay. Like, somebody was just like, we can't afford that.
Exactly. Yes. Sorry, what you've said is just, yeah. You wanted a spaceship? How about a spaceship and a hangar? Well, how about a hangar? All right, then. We'll do that.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's weird how this, like, ultra-modern complex looks like a warehouse.
Hot damn. Anyway, we're actually hitting the hour mark.
Yes, and I think you have to go, and I have to go.
Yeah, neither of us got to talk about things we're going to talk about, but we can always do that next time.
Yes, we should make a note. Yeah. So we'll play some music.
Yes. Music.
Woo!
Boop, boop.